Hello and welcome back to the Grazia Life Advice Podcast. I hope you're having a really good week and are ready for some great anecdotes and advice from a fabulous French musician, actor and model.
Hi, I'm Joséphine de la Baume. I'm an actress and a singer and I'm this week's guest on Life Advice Podcast for Grazia.
Joséphine tells us about filming the latest series of Top Boy during lockdown.
You know, it was a difficult part, and so at times you kind of want to stay with, you know, in the place that you've managed to found yourself in, even if you have to switch off sometimes because it's emotionally too draining.
Yeah, to sort of live with your character a little bit more.
Yeah, even if it's not every day, it's still in the back of your mind, it's still a little bit, and that doesn't get distracted by anything if you're by yourself.
And she tells us about being a rebel at school.
I was kind of a rowdy teenager. I think I used classrooms as a platform to perform day and night. I was smoking cigarettes in the class to make people laugh. I was like dancing on, you know, tables and like turning the whole classroom into a musical.
Yeah. It sounds like you should be in Euphoria.
No. I wish.
Finally, we discuss the power of leaving parties without saying goodbye.
So I think I do get a little bit like overwhelmed easily, much more than I used to. I get much more anxious when I go to events, sometimes I have to leave quick if there's too many people.
A French exit, as we call it.
In France, weirdly, we call it filer à l'anglaise, which means like run away like an English person.
We'll be hearing about all of that, plus Joséphine's amazing grandma who fought in the French Resistance, her bohemian upbringing, and also some strange advice that she received from her French therapist. Hi, Joséphine. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast this morning. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. And you?
I'm okay, thanks. Yeah, it's bright and early here and I'm feeling good. It's the end of the week. Yeah, things feel like they're kind of getting better, dare I say, whilst obviously so much in the world is getting worse. It's this weird thing of kind of personally feeling like things are improving, but...
But being in a constant sci-fi movie.
Exactly.
Waking up to one more catastrophe every
day. I know. Yes. Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you are going to be in the new series of Top Boy, which is brilliant.
Yeah. That came about after going through a long, very long audition process with a lot of anticipation and trying not to think about it too much, but praying and manifesting as much as possible. But we were, there was a few callbacks, and also it was a process because it was, you know, COVID already. So, you know, I gave everything that I had, because originally the part was called Poppy and she was English, and I can't do an English accent however much I try, and I've been living here for 10 years, so I thought my best bet was to really just, you know, give the best performance I could and try and relate to that character as much as possible, and it's a difficult part too. So I did that, and thankfully it worked.
I can't wait to see it. It's got some other interesting people in as well, this series, hasn't it? It's got Adwa, the amazing model, in it as well.
Yes, she's a good friend of mine.
Great. I can't wait to see it.
It was a coincidence. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was quite funny. We're actually on holiday together, and because we have a very good friend in common, so we just happened to be there at the same time. And we kind of, you know, it's so secret, so you have to like sign so many NDAs, and then we kind of hinted something at each other and like looked at each other and were like, wait, are you going through the same stressful / excitement? And it was just a mad coincidence.
That is so funny.
Yeah. We really kind of, I think we kind of merged our forces and kind of prayed for each other at the same time, like staring at the moon. Please.
Amazing. Well, Joséphine, you're here today to share some of your life advice with us. And your first piece of advice is something that your friend René Ricard said to you. Is that right?
Yes. I don't know that anyone should listen to my advice, but let's see. I'll try and do my best.
So what did he say to you?
So René Ricard was an amazing painter and poet. You know, he's the person who discovered Basquiat on the street. and he was part of the factory with Andy Warhol. He was 19, and he was one of the first people that I met when I moved to New York, which is not the least interesting one, you know. And he's kind of an incredible character, extremely talented. And he writes amazing poetry and very funny lines. And on one of his paintings, he wrote, "God will forgive you, it's his job," which I think is hilarious, but also kind of resonated with me because, you know, I grew up with this in a Catholic family. I mean, at least my father is Catholic. My mother doesn't really believe in anything, but with this element of guilt, which I think is ridiculous, you know?
Mm.
So I think that completely releases any of that. And I think it's just catchy and funny. And maybe I'm just, you know, a coward, but I was like, that's great. This really resonates with me.
Yeah, I suppose it's quite freeing once you accept that.
It is quite freeing, yeah, exactly. I think it's just a funny one. And I think ultimately, you know, life is just a succession of experience and mistakes that you learn from also, you know, that make you grow, that make you kind of do things differently next time and probably in a more, in a better way or in a more human way. Or so I think this element of like, you've made, you know, this was wrong, this was bad, unless you've killed someone, I mean,
yeah,
I think that, or you've hurt people intentionally, but otherwise you're kind of supposed to make mistakes to learn. I think that's also what's in it. It's like,
yeah, absolutely. Your second piece of advice is a really interesting one, and I think involves a story about your grandmother, and it's to be on the right side of history. And can you tell us a bit about your grandmother and why this has come up as a piece of advice for you?
My grandmother was very young when the war, the Second World War, started. And she lost her husband while she was swimming in the sea, actually. She was went to meet him on the war boat. She was part of the French resistance. And she lost her husband at a very young age. The boat, which was kind of the size of the Titanic, but it was an army boat, sank. And she was one of the five survivors. She even had her bottom beaten by sharks. It was in the sea in Africa. I mean, it's kind of an insane story. And eventually was found by an English boat and got to hospital and, you know, ended up joining the French resistance again. I mean, it's like, I feel like my answers are very long-winded. But
this is amazing.
An incredible story, yeah.
Yeah.
And she, I mean, you know, she went on so many different missions and the story she told me, you wouldn't believe it. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And all her best friends were extremely incredible, brave woman, you know. Anyway, so I think, you know, the Second World War was so much a part of the way she kind of looked at life for the rest of her life.
Mm.
And so I think this element, this idea of, you know, you want to be on the right side of history and, giving us those kind of values at a very young age.
After, yeah.
You know, respecting humanity and fighting for justice in a way, I think was very important for her to tell her grandchildren, her children.
Yeah.
It's something that always came back in conversations.
Mm, mm.
But I think it's an important concept to have in mind at a young age.
You
know? Yeah. To get a sense of the world as opposed to just your little world.
Absolutely. She must have been such an inspiring presence in your life. To have all those amazing stories. Yeah.
And when her friends came over and they started kind of chatting about the past, I was like, couldn't believe the stories I was listening to.
Yeah. Your third piece of advice is in French, so I'm going to let you say it in your beautiful French accent rather than butcher it with my franglaise. So please tell us.
It's my mother that always said to me, va plus haut, il y a moins de monde. Which means rise above, there are less people up there.
Uh-huh.
Meaning when something bothers you or you feel like a bit upset about what someone might have done to you or something, it's just like, to kind of be the bigger person, go higher, there are less people, just be the bigger person and let it affect you.
Are there particular times in your life that you've drawn on that?
I think I remember it a lot in teenage years, you know? I think when you're a teenager, your friends are everything. They're more important than your parents, you know what I mean? And I think you get affected so much more by, it's your first experiences in love. It's your first experiences in betrayal, maybe, or like, you know, very meaningful ones. It's your first experiences in understanding, starting to understand yourself. You're no longer a child, understanding yourself as like a young adult or something, and trying to position yourself in the world. And I think, you know, teenagers can be quite cruel with each other. And you're quite insecure as a teenager.
Yeah, absolutely. Where were you at school?
I was in Paris. I was getting kicked out of schools a lot. So I went to a lot of different schools. I was kind of a rowdy teenager. So I think I used classrooms as a platform to perform day and night for the class. I mean,
oh, really? What kind of thing were you doing?
I was smoking cigarettes in the class to make people laugh. I was like dancing on, you know, tables and like turning the whole classroom into a musical.
Yeah. It sounds like you should be in Euphoria.
I wish. So I think, you know, I was entertaining myself and others, but I wasn't very, I was disrupting classes a little bit.
We're just going to jump to a quick ad break and we will be right back with Josephine Delabolle. And we're back with Josephine, who is sharing her amazing life advice with us. And we're on to her fourth piece of advice, which is don't obsess about love too much. Obsess instead about life.
Once again, it's a translation. It's my friend Philippe,
yeah,
who I loved, who was a big casting director in Paris. He passed away. Sorry, I'm only using my dead friends.
keep the legacy alive.
Yeah, exactly. it's quite simple. And I think there's something quite funny about it, you know, because it has in it something of a friend that knows you well. And I think, so in a way, he was kind of taking the piece out of me, you know, when I would get a bit obsessive with certain, you know, love stories. But I think that there's something very simple, but it's just a nice reminder. And for some reason, there's something a bit relieving also about hearing that. You're like, it's again, a little bit the idea of like, love is part of like a life journey, and there's going to be so many different aspects of it that you're going to, you know, discover. So instead of focusing on like one unhappy moment, look at it within, you know, a capsule of an entire life and everything that's around it and everything that you're learning with all the mistakes that are happening within this relationship, for example. And also to kind of like, you know, when you're upset about love or when you're too excited about love, you kind of can't really see around anymore. So it's just kind of saying like open your vision a little bit, you know.
Yeah. Is that something that you think has become easier as you've got older?
I think unfortunately or fortunately, you know, and I even see it with, you know, people in my family that are in their 70s or something. I think you kind of are forever a bit of a teenager when you fall in love. And I think that's great. I think you learn not to, you know, make the same mistake.
I guess you get to a point as you get older where you're filling your life with so much other things that, whereas when you were younger, love and passion is like the thing in your life.
I don't know if it's so much about being, I don't know, you know, I really see some people, I would see when it was like my great aunt until she was 90 was like still kind of like wondering how she should end the letter she should write.
Really? I love that.
They're very love prone in my family, you know? And I think until the end, really. So I don't think it really changes. And I say that the reason why I talk about my family is because I say that from facts.
Yeah.
I've seen, I'm not 90 yet. So I think it's just saying open your eyes a little bit. Don't let it overtake you completely.
Mm. That's great advice.
So many aspects that are exciting.
Yeah.
And so you can't let one person kind of take over.
Basically. Yeah, that is excellent advice. And now your fifth piece of advice is something that your dad said to you which is don't do unto others what you wouldn't do unto you. Tell me a bit about your dad and your relationship with him and why he might have said this.
I think because he's very fair with people. And I see that with my brother as well. There's an idea of everybody has something that they might want to say or that they might want to express. Whatever people might be doing, it's the other way around too. It works. Whatever people might be doing. My father is very kind of like, you know, has done therapy for so long, a lot of analysis, a lot of kind of alternative things because he needed to do that, basically, because he's a very emotional and poetic human being. But that, yeah, being that romantic and poetic comes with sometimes quite a lot of feelings to carry with you every day. And I think that he understands that people might behave in a certain way because they come from a place of fear or pain or... So to kind of be tolerant and indulgent with other people and then to not do what you wouldn't want, you know, other people to do to you because you, in a way, again, you might be doing things coming from a place of insecurity. But if you start and understand why people do that and they don't always mean it, they don't mean to upset you, then you might not do that because you might not want to upset them because maybe you're doing it also from a place of fear and insecurity. Reacting too fast.
Do you find that boundaries can be challenging when you're such a kind of understanding and emotionally intelligent, empathetic person? It's sort of harder to say no to people or to not let people into your life.
I have zero boundary, that's for sure. I grew up in a house where like there was always like a million people living there, my mother, best friend or someone who was heartbroken or a student who had nowhere to live, or, you know. So I think I was never taught boundaries. We always had, you know, if I had a boyfriend who had, like, a really complicated family situation, he moved in with us. Like, so it was very joyful, but no, I don't have boundaries.
Yeah, I get the picture, which is in some ways so wonderful, like, to be so open and loving and welcoming. But I can imagine there are times when it's hard.
But I do like that my life is so dense and has so much love in it because I've got so many friends, you know, and so many people that I care for.
Yeah.
Maybe lockdown was a bit of a holiday for me.
Right. I can imagine. Yeah. Suddenly you're...
I was alone.
Alone.
There's someone leaving with me to some extent somewhere, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I'm always like, cool house or friend from Paris. And suddenly I was like, oh. The first lockdown I wasn't alone. I was with three friends, but the second lockdown. So like,
and did you enjoy it?
I liked it, yeah, because you know what, I think in a way you do things that you don't have time to do if there's people around all the time. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, reading, catching up on movies. And also, to be honest, I was filming Top Boy for the second lockdown.
So you could just focus, yeah.
So I could focus, and I think it was quite a, you know, it was a difficult part. And so at times it is a bit hard and not very good also for concentration to kind of like have to be there or just be present with someone else. And you kind of want to stay with, you know, in the place that you've managed to found yourself in, even if you have to switch off sometimes because it's emotionally too draining, but it's kind of nice to not completely let go of it. You have that space to kind of like not have to.
Yeah, to sort of live with your character a little bit more.
Yeah, even if it's not every day, it's still in the back of your mind, it's still a little bit, and that doesn't get distracted by anything if you're by yourself.
Yeah.
I didn't mind it. I mean, I was going on set, meeting, seeing people, so I felt quite
lucky. Had some routine. Mm.
Yeah.
Your sixth piece of advice is to never ruin an apology with an excuse.
It's an advice I should really give to myself. The only reason why I wrote that is because it's literally what I do every time I apologize. I then find an excuse, which is kind of relates to what I said earlier. It's like I said that because, and I try and explain where I came from.
Yeah.
Even if it might be, well, like, you know, I felt upset because and then I felt insecure, like, all this stuff.
Mm.
But in a way, I'm already justifying myself for, so I'm empathetic towards my own self. Which is terrible.
I mean, there's definitely a place for kind of, you know, expressing yourself and apologizing with a reason. You know, you're giving someone probably what they want, which is like a, well, why did this happen? But I do see your point as well. Like, it sometimes negates the power of the apology.
It really does. And it's also, I think it's good to explain where it came from. But I genuinely, suddenly by the end of it, will have completely justified why I did that. And sorry, don't even believe in my apology anymore. I'm like, wait, hold on a second. Actually,
yeah, I'm wrong. I take that back.
Yeah, exactly. So that pretty much happens every single time.
Yeah. And that's brilliant advice. Your seventh and final piece of advice is a little controversial, but I think kind of there's a nihilistic spirit to it, which I really enjoy. So tell us your bad piece of advice, Josephine.
Bad advice. Oh yeah. Don't quit smoking, which was given to me from two different people who I literally went to see. I don't smoke that much, but I've been smoking for a long time. I smoke mostly, you know, in the evening or if I go out, but then I'll smoke, you mm-hmm. know, a bunch of cigarettes. So it's not every day, but it's still, you know, enough that I wanted to try and quit. Mm-hmm. And so I went to see a hypnotist in Paris. And she said to me, she started kind of trying to hypnotize me, and we started talking about other stuff. And she was like, you know what? I think just don't quit smoking. You're not ready for that. Let's just work on other things. There's a lot of work to do, you know, on other areas. And I just wouldn't quit smoking just yet. I was like, right. Oh, God. Just, I guess I was going through kind of a difficult time at the time. I was just like, you know, it was like I was going through a breakup. It was difficult. And I just was like, you know, I was like, that's always an excuse to smoke twice as much. And I was like, let's just not do that this time.
Yeah.
And she advised me to continue smoking twice as much. And then, which was like, wow, if you were living in LA, you really would have a job for much longer.
No, it's very Parisian.
I love that. Only in France, really. And yeah. Around the same time, I was exercising, you know, running and everything with a trainer. And I told him that. And then he was like, you know what? I didn't want to tell you, but I also think you shouldn't quit smoking because you've been trying to lose weight. And it's just not the right time to quit smoking if you want to lose weight. I was like, Jesus Christ, the two of you, what's going on? I was like, wow. Oh, my God. It's like, just lose weight and then quit smoking. And I was like, okay. Which is a trainer who's supposed to kind of make you healthier. Both of them were supposed to make me healthier, and both of them supported 100% my cigarette addiction.
You're fine.
So, yeah.
Well, I mean, we've all got to have some kind of outlet or vice, and I guess it comes back to your first piece of advice of, you know, God will forgive you for smoking. Smoking, well, I don't, like, I'm not endorsing it. There's a social element that I think some people enjoy of, like, it being something that can take you out of a moment at a party. It's like a escapism.
But it's a bad habit. It needs to stop.
Yeah. What's your sort of evening, like, nightlife vibe these days after lockdown? Have you changed the things you enjoy doing? Do you still like going out in the evenings, partying, or?
Well, at first, I really had bad social anxiety. I think we all had that. I literally, the first, you know, party that I went to, I just had to sit in a corner with, like, the two people that I used to go for walks with, you know, a couple that lived close to my house, because I just couldn't. I just was like, and I'm not really shy on top of it usually. And So I think I do get a little bit, like, overwhelmed easily, much more than I used to. I get much more anxious when I go to events or to some kind of, like, yeah, gathering. And sometimes I have to leave quick if there's too many people.
A French exit, as we call it.
French exit?
No, so a French exit is where you just leave a party without saying goodbye to anyone.
Yeah. In France, weirdly, we call it filet à l'anglaise. It's funny how, like, English and French people just do.
You call it an English exit?
Filet à l'anglaise, which means, like, run away like an English person.
Really? That's so funny. Wow. Well, I think it's far too chic a move to be English.
I mean, it's just kind of a rude move. It means just not saying goodbye to anyone.
Yeah, basically. For sure. But sometimes there's a place for it, like, you know, if everybody's drunk and nobody's going to appreciate your goodbye anyway, you might as well.
There's
just
always a place for it.
Yeah.
But I think what I missed the most was really, live music is mm-hmm. really what I was missing. Live music, and I was missing theater as well.
Yeah.
I've been seeing a lot of shows. I've been going to. So that mm-hmm. I would say I'm kind of making up for lost time.
And are you looking forward to performing again with your band?
Yeah, we just actually performed. We opened for our friends called La Femme. They're a big mm-hmm. French band, big French rock band. And we were just on tour with them, and that was really fun. And we're playing in London, actually. We're opening for them on the 21st of April at the O2 Kentish Forum.
Okay.
And we should be playing a show, our own show, around the same time, but I'm not sure exactly. It'll be probably 2 days after.
Yeah.
We're organizing it now. Fantastic. And then the record comes out in June. So we're playing a bunch of festivals this summer, and we'll be playing, we're kind of like adding dates. And then, that was really fun. I've really missed that.
Josephine, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I could so many more questions. I'd love to find out more about your life and your I can just kind of picture your house and your family, and it's like so sort of fabulously bohemian and French and full of love and creative characters. So maybe that's a talk for another time, but thank you so much for sharing your life advice.
Whenever you want. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Grazia Life Advice. If you know anyone who makes French exits or runs away from parties like an English person, then make sure you share this episode with them. We'll be back next time. Bye.